All right, everyone, welcome back. It is another edition of Inside Boxing Live presented by PPV.com. It's Dan Canobio. It's the champion, Chris Algieri, and it is a fight announcement for you. Fundora versus Thurman is streaming live on PPV.com March 28th. Join us in the live interactive chat. Subscribe. You don't have to subscribe. I'm used to saying subscribe because that's what everyone else does. You don't have to subscribe to PPV.com. You go fight by fight. You can stream it to any device. Obviously, you want to have a watch party. You want to have a fight party in your living room. Bring right to the TV. Pull up the app. PPV.com will be carrying Fundora versus Thurman, which should be a fun one. At 154 pounds, our proud presenting sponsor. So if you order the fight on March 28th, do it with us. Do it with us so we can keep doing these podcasts. Chris, how are you? It is midnight. Never did a podcast this late at night because we just watched Jaio Pitaya become the first ever Zuffa boxing cruiserweight world champion.
Historic.
Where were you?
This is going to go down in history because this is the first one. And we're going to look back on this many years from now and we're going to look at this like, wow, this is the first one. But right now, nobody cares. It's not that big of a deal right now. It will be. But yeah, right now it's not that big of a deal. And it's late at night on a Sunday, so I'm a little low energy.
You're good, bro. You look great.
Zuffa, guys, you gotta fix this Sunday night thing. This is like a good idea to avoid the big UFC fights that were last night. But you got to do them. If you're going to do Sunday, you got to do them earlier. It is midnight on Sunday night before a work week. And we're sitting here talking about boxing. So
that part doesn't make sense to me. So yeah, we're going to bring Opetayo over to the U.S. We're going to expose him to more fans. We're going to expose him to more casuals.
Wasn't a lot of fans in the Apex, that's for sure.
No, that part didn't make much sense to me. You know, burying him on a Sunday night at midnight. You know, do it earlier. We'll get into the shenanigans with the belts, with the IBF. Like, his IBF belt was on his shoulder in the post-fight, but I'm pretty sure he's going to be stripped. We'll get to all that in a second. But as for the actual fight, I thought Opetayo looked good, borderline great. I threw out sensational on Twitter, and I got some pushback. Brandon Glenn is made out of cement. It's very hard to judge a guy's power based off of Brandon Glenn's iron dome because he was just taking a lot of punishment. There's a lot of holding in there. But Opetayo took about two or three rounds to heat up. I thought he looked really great in there. His movement was really impressive. Then his left hand is just vicious. The right uppercut that Andre Ward pointed out would be a big pine punch. He was able to land that. I thought it was a good performance. He dominated Glenn. We've never seen Glenn lose like that. So I thought all in all, really, really good performance from the clear number one cruiserweight in the world. That's Jaio Pitaya.
There's a reason that we stayed up to watch this fight. It's Jaio Pitaya. And this fight went pretty much exactly how I expected. Because Glanton is a guy that's fought on Pro Box on our air quite a bit. And he is what he is. And what'd you say? You've made a cement. Max said on the air that Glanton's made out of concrete. You know, and I was like, that's really well put. The guy is super strong. He's super fit. He's got the heart and will of concrete as well. And even in the 10th round, he looked like he was ready to break, and he didn't. You know, he had that big hematoma in the middle of his forehead. He was getting pieced up by Opetaya's offense, which is very dynamic, and he looked like he was ready to break, but he didn't. He pushed through. He soldiered on. 12th round, he took some big shots. Looked like he was almost ready to go there. Refereeing was a little awkward.
What was that?
Weird. Taking a lot of points, making himself a star tonight, and not in a good way. But all in all, this is why we're up talking about this, because Jaio Pitaya is that good. He is that guy. Phenomenal, dynamic offense, solid defense, fantastic gas tank show tonight. Because that was something I always worried about him. Because he's a big guy for Cruiser. Late in fights, we've seen him fade against Bredis, you know, both fights actually. You know, one, mm-hmm. first one he had a broken jaw, but the second one he faded late, and Bredis actually came on. He didn't show that tonight. He actually kept ratcheting it up. I thought he looked really good at the end of the fight. Even his post-fight press conference, post-fight interview, he looked sharp. He looked energetic. Jai's the guy, man. He's the guy at Cruiserweight, and there's no question. And Glanton, man, I tip my hat to you. Super tough dude, but he is what he is. This fight went exactly how I thought.
Yes, I agree. Like you said, pressure fighters usually takes a little bit for them to warm up. And I don't believe that Opetaia actually showed that he was a pressure fighter tonight. I thought he was very calculated.
It's not at all.
I thought, if anything, he was like, all right, I'm not going to come in there and be pressure. I'm going to be a little more poised. I'm going to be a little more calculated. I'm not going to smother my shots. I'm going to pick my spots. And he did, and it was beautiful. Like, the movement, to me, is what I think how he can beat, like, a Zerto, who's more of a plotter, and how he could beat a Benavidez. Not saying that I think he could beat those guys, but that's the athleticism of this guy. Like, it almost makes me think that that he can't go to heavyweight with how easily he moves in there. But we see the same thing for Usyk, that you could win at 210, 215 if you have sublime skills. I'm not ready for that conversation just yet. But I really liked what I saw from Opetaia in there with a guy in Glenn who was top 15-ish in the division. IBF put him at 15 so they could sanction this fight and then not sanction it. The ring has him at 10, but there's a lot of fugaziness with the ring rankings as of late. Glenn came in there and did what he's supposed to do. He was a tough guy that looked the part in all the lead-up. Like, oh, look at this guy. He's muscle-bound. He's had some big wins and some big knockouts early on in his career. Like, he's going to give Opetaia a big test. But we knew there was going to be levels here. And Opetaia, the biggest thing now for him is just staying active and staying in the public eye and not going away and not disappearing to Australia and becoming irrelevant. Like, stay in front of the people here in the U.S. Like, go, like, be part of that TKO machine. Go to Monday Night Raw. Go to UFC events. And, bang the drum for the Zerto and Benavidez winner, because that's clearly what he wants. That's clearly what we need to see next. So I think Opetaia, he passed all the tests. A lot of shit was thrown his way between the nonsense with the IBF and the sanctioning belts, and that's got to be a huge distraction too. And the first big signing for Zuffa, all that comes with all that. First time he's actually like out in front of a big promotion and like the main guy. You know, you can attest to how much that has to play a role. And he went in there and did what he had to do.
Yeah, the thing about Opetaia is it's not just about keeping him active, because Matchroom kept him active and he was knocking guys' heads off, cleaning them off. But there were guys no one heard of. If you look at his last, like, five opponents, they're all sterling records, undefeated guys. They're all guys, I don't know them. If I don't know them, that's a problem. You know, boxing fans in America are really not going to know them if I don't know them. But he's knocking their heads off, so you're getting highlight reel knockouts. But I think with the marketing machine and the marketing arm of Zuffa and everything they're doing to push him, I think it'll help. It'll help get him out there more to the American audience, because that's really what he needs. And I think that's part of the reason why his stint with Matchroom didn't work out, because even Matchroom, as big as they are and as important they are on the world stage, Matchroom USA is relatively new. I think they started in 2018 over here or whatever. Mm-hmm. They're not like deep in the culture here. They're still much better at building UK fighters. They've got the marketing down over there. They don't have it over here quite the same. And also, Eddie just doesn't care about the fighters over here as much as he does the fighters in the UK. And I can say the same thing about Australia. He just does not care. Look at the way he's moving Boots compared to the way he's moving Ben. Look at the way that he's moving Josh Kelly compared to the way he's moving any of the other fighters that he has in the US. He's had a couple guys in the US, and he's hot and heavy in the beginning, and then he kind of like, falls off. He doesn't have that personal connection the way he does with a lot of the UK fighters, the Anthony Joshuas, and the formerly Conor Benns. But I think with this marketing arm of Zuffa and their tendrils in the US market, Jai Opetaia has a chance to become a star. But to your point, he's going to need those big fights. He's going to need the Zertos of the world, the David Benavidezes of the world, although I don't think he's going to stay at cruiserweight, regardless of how the fight goes. He needs the Mikelion, unification fight, even though he's already been stripped of the IBF. It's very muddled. It's very muddled.
It's ridiculous.
But if you're a cruiserweight, you need the names. You need the other guys. You need the other champions, because otherwise nobody cares.
Did you watch the post-fight interview with Opetaia and Max?
Yes.
They were having two different conversations in the ring.
100%. They weren't even talking to each other.
No, it was bizarre, because Opetaia is in there saying, I want to be undisputed. He's saying WBA, WBO, IBF. I got two, three belts. Like, we're adding belts. There's like eight belts out there now. He wants them all. Max is then not even listening to a single word he's saying and say, no, it's not. You're undisputed already. Like, you're the guy.
No, you're not.
You're the guy because we say you're the guy. Like, we signed you to Zuffa. You're the guy. Don't bring up any of these other guys because we don't need belts to say that you're the best. I say you're the best. We say you're the best. TKO says you're the best. So it isn't undisputed, even though it's very disputed because there's a guy over there in Zerto Ramirez who's been pretty damn good at cruiserweight. There's a new player on the block here in David Benavidez. They're going to be fighting each other. There's a WBC champion, and now there's going to be a new IBF champion because he's about to get stripped. But that goes to this whole nonsense that we saw with the IBF. Like, let's get into that. Like, he gets stripped of the IBF belt the minute he steps into the ring. Apparently, the IBF flew to Las Vegas and were all for it. They paid their sanctioning fees, Obataya's team. He even did the next day weigh-in. Then you hear that the IBF pulls the sanction at the last minute, citing one of their rules, saying that if there's another sanctioning body in there that's not recognized, which is Zuffa, then we don't have to sanction the fight. They pull the plug on it. They also say, IBF, that they felt disrespected with the way that the belt was lack of display from the belt up on the stage. It was just an absolute mess. And we're, as media, as fans, we're sitting here trying to figure out, like, what to make of it all, and like, who's to blame here? Did Zuffa go too far? Like, these things can all be true, Chris. Obataya should not have signed with Zuffa if he's this dead set on wanting to be undisputed. Plain and simple, number one.
Or he doesn't know the rules. And I mean the rules of Zuffa, in terms of maybe he didn't think that they were going to really stick to this. They're like, nah, you know. But listen, Dana, also, the message is muddled. Because Dana came out and said, like, oh, you know, We signed Obataya. He's going to be able to fight for all the belts. That was a headline. That was something said. So who knows what was said to him in the, you know, pre-signing or whatever. It was one of those, like, you're telling the girl all these different things so you can get a date with her, and then you get the date and you're like, yeah, well, I didn't really mean all that, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, I just want you to come over.
Yeah, like,
we're actually not going now that you're here.
Now that you're here, yeah, we're not going to dinner. We're not going to that 5-star French restaurant anymore. We're not going to that Michelin star restaurant. It seems kind of like that, but I like how Obataya got in that interview and just like, no, I want to be undisputed. I'm talking about these belts. He just did not get the memo at all.
No, like, you lost one tonight, man.
But dude.
You gained a trophy because that's what we found out the Zuffa belt is technically classified as. But the IBF, like, these can all be true. Obataya should not have signed with Zuffa if he wanted to be undisputed, plain and simple. The IBF had every right not to sanction a fight with an organization that's actively looking to eliminate them. The IBF could have made their stance known a lot sooner than fight week. Seems like they wanted to make a big stink and they wanted to do some grandstanding here. And Zuffa could have done a better job. Right. And Zuffa could have done a better job of displaying the titles and doing what all the other organizations do when it comes to unification bouts and all the other promoters do, I should say, in terms of unification bouts and making it known. Like, Zuffa was playing it halfway too. Like you said, Dana White says, we're going to let this guy fight for the belts. And then all week long, you don't see a single thing about the IBF. In fact, nothing at all.
But Jai kept bringing it. He brought it on stage. He kept wearing it. I remember being like, I'm looking at, you know, the headlines of him possibly, you know, potentially being stripped, which the writing was on the wall. He was 100% going to get stripped tonight, all week long. You're looking at it. But then he kept bringing it on stage. He kept having it on his shoulder. Fighters care about belts. And obviously, Obataya cares about these belts. He kept bringing it on stage. He kept bringing it up afterwards. And you're right. The way that they have been kind of like tiptoeing in and out of, no, the belt, this belt, we can have the belt, and then not really.
Both sides.
Like, all right, guys, if you're coming to take over and you're the new world order, don't play nice. Say no belts on stage. Say no belts. Say they're not recognized. Take your sanctioning and have your fighters understand that if you come to us, your belt is gone.
Yeah, we're recording this, obviously. Yeah, I agree. We're recording this, obviously, like, moments after the fight ended. So Dana White is doing his post-fight press conference right now. So I'm scouring Twitter, and I'm seeing Dana White hints at a lawsuit aimed at the IBF over the decision to strip Jai Obataya of his cruiserweight title. For what I'm hearing, that's something the IBF is very nervous about. according to Chris Mannix. So, like, I think, like I said, all these things can be true. I think the IBF, they shouldn't have stripped him the way they did. Like, the words they use, like, we felt disrespected.
Yeah, that's silly.
You know, but, like, you knew what was going to happen. Like, all parties knew what was going to happen, seemingly besides Opetaia. Because I watched Opetaia, his manager, do an interview with Fight Hub, I believe. And he's, you know, whining, and I can't believe they did this to us. Like, what are we, children? Let's, you know, let's figure this all out. This is unfair. I can't believe it. In the back of my mind, I'm thinking, okay, is anyone going to ask, like, didn't you foresee this?
Yeah, did anyone explain this to you? Is this not in the contracts? Is this
like we
do
all?
Do you not watch boxing news? Do you not listen to our show? This shouldn't be a surprise.
Right. That's what I mean. It's like good management. You should take a look at every potential option, every potential roadblock, every potential something like interference. And know exactly who you're signing with, or were they just so damn excited to sign with anyone? Because as Paulie Malgi said on Pro Box, it's like this is a guy that has fought for short money. It's just like, let's get me in the ring. I don't care. And then they sign with the first organization that shows any type of interest in them, and it will give you better sparring, which is clearly like helped out, because that's the one thing is you keep getting the same sparring over in Australia. I mean, you're not getting good sparring. So they have them here in Vegas at the PI for months, and that's like, you know, they can entice these fighters. So I felt like the management team, everyone here is I hate to be that, like, not choose a side, like, everyone here is guilty because they all knew what they were doing. And then they waited for, like, the night before the fight, literally, for shit to hit the fan. But everyone knew, like, what was going to happen. Ultimately, that belt was not going to be on the line. And there now there's going to be lawsuits. Who's to blame? And was IBF wrong? Was Zuffa wrong? It's a mess. It's an absolute mess. Now we have six belts.
Everybody knew messaging was not done properly, but also this, both sides are doing this too. This personal slight that they're taking, the IBF, oh, we felt this. Shut up. You're an organization. You're not a person. You're not an individual. You shouldn't feel disrespected. This is business. So this whole personal thing, and we're seeing that more and more with the governing bodies. WBC was the same thing with Mauricio Suleiman. Now we're seeing it with the IBF, this personal slight. The fighters, okay, we understand. You're a service to fighters. It's not the other way around. These governing bodies, again, are starting to act like they're bigger than the fighters. You're not bigger than your champions. Your champions are everything. You have to respect your champions. Stop with the respect thing. You're not an entity. You are an organization. You're not a person. You're not slighted by your champions or the way that another organization or promotion is treating you because you're a goddamn belt. Stop that. Your champions are what matters. Champions are the ones who are people. So you need to respect the champions, not the other way around. Now, in terms of the organization, get your pay, be prominent on stage, and get mentioned. I understand that. That's the business aspect of it. To take the respect thing out of it. There's too much of that talking with these businesses. Fighters deserve respect, not promotions or belts. And in that sense, like this silliness of going back and forth and waiting till the last minute, it should be by the rules, by the book. I like how the IBF is standing by their, you know, standing on business for all this stuff. They're doing that right. But how you go about it, the messaging matters.
Why didn't they stand on business weeks ago? Why didn't they come out and say, exactly, why fly there? Why show up? Why is it like humiliation ritual? Why fly there, show up, get the sanctioning fee apparently? Like, apparently he paid the 80,000, whatever, 60,000.
That's why, Dan. That's why you show
and
up.
And then leave?
Yes, grab your check apparently and go. Dana also it is a business.
Dana also hinted at the guy showed up and was like, where's my per diem? So it's like, here's a question. Should Zuffa have put their, should they have been more strict about it?
Yeah, they should have said, you can't come. You don't have a
should
ticket.
Should they have said, you're not welcome. 100%. Sorry, Ja. You signed with us. Like, yes, I believe. Yes, if you're really trying to be the power player.
Yep. Don't
Zuffa
don't half-ass
should have put their
it.
Foot down.
Don't half-ass. Yeah. You're not allowed here. I think they did. I think they did it to Mauricio. They're like, you're not invited to the event, whatever. Like, yeah, you're not allowed here. Your business is not welcome here.
Yeah, but their belts were still on the line, though, because they wanted that undisputed marketing.
That's where the messaging is muddled. If you are the big dog who's coming in and kicking down doors and telling people to get out, be that. Don't sneak in. Don't sliver in and then be like, okay, guys, you got to go. You're not supposed to be here. Kick them out the door right away. You can't be here.
Yeah, you know what I'm thinking? I'm thinking they both were using each other for some press. Like 100%. Zufa's using IBF to be like, can you believe these guys? Look at that. They want their sanctioning fee. They took it. They left. They're saying we got disrespected.
But you let them come in the door.
And then you're the IBF, and the IBF's like, you know what? We're going to fly there. We're going to put them on the defensive. We're going to make them kick us out. And then they're the one, like they're staring. There's a stare down. They're staring at each other. And Zufa's like, yeah, I guess we could go through with this. And then IBF's like, shit, now we're going to go through with this. And then, know what? We were disrespected, even though the belt was on the table. He was holding the belt. The guy does the next day weigh-in, which I feel like is a way for them to just keep it going and say, hey, like next week, like, can we figure out a way to work this out where I can still be the IBF champion? It was such a mess. And like both sides, I believe truly, that were playing each other. And I just couldn't believe that Zufa wants to come in with Dana White, Nick Khan, and kind of be, you know, the bullies of boxing now. They could have really put their foot down and made a big time statement. And that
gets you're gonna be gangster. If you're gonna be gangsters, be a gangster. You know, like don't halfway it.
Do you think it was because they didn't want to piss off Opetaia, like their prize sign? Because if there's one person that's very clear about all this, it's Opetaia on wanting to be undisputed. Poor guy is a boxer.
They're not clear. They're not clear to him. Apparently, the message is not clear to him. Whether it's not going in the head or he's not being told. And I think it's a combination of the two that I don't know if he understands really coming to Zufa means he cannot fight for these belts and he cannot be undisputed. Because, again, the messaging is very confusing. Dana said he's going to be able to fight for other belts, but now all of a sudden IBF is out. So what are we doing? We need clear-cut rules. And that's the thing. Like, this is a new organization. These guys are coming into a whole new sandbox, and they're trying to take over, but they can't take over right away. And it's going to be an insidious buildup. So it's going to take time. So there are concessions being made. But in terms of if you're going to be the gangster big dog who rolls into town, be that guy and come into both barrels smoking. And we're not seeing that. Because I feel bad for Opetaia, for Jai, because he doesn't seem to understand that this is for real. These belts are not going to be available to you anymore. You know, you've decided to fight for this new black BMF looking belt, and that's your belt now. You're not going to be able to have a red belt and a green belt and a black belt. And there's not going to be any gold in any of your belts anymore. You're going to have to fight for the black belt and the ring belt, of course. But yeah, I'm more and more, I'm feeling like boxing is high school. Between Dana White and Eddie Hearn having a love triangle or a love quadrangle at this point, stealing each other's girlfriends, you know, putting on events to shove in each other's faces, and IBF and Zufa waiting to the last minute to make big scenes and to get more likes and clicks. It's very high school right now, and it doesn't seem like the way business is supposed to operate. But here we are.
It's also a lot of egos, man. Power, disruption. Power, disruption, egos, like... IBF has been doing their thing for a while. They actually got in trouble a couple of years back with all sorts of stuff. Like WBC, they're all used to doing stuff their way. We get flown in. We get a hotel suite. We walk into the ring. Our belt gets shown off, and we do this forever because this is what we're used to. This is how it is. Then Zufa comes in and says, no, we're trying to switch the whole game up. And then you're just power plays. Power plays, egos, and who suffers? The fighter. Joe Opetaia, who's not, I'm not going to say he's completely innocent because, you know, Chris, you can attest to this. Like, you're the boss. Like, you need to take control of your damn career. Like, because he's looking kind of like foolish at times now when he's up in there in the ring and he's talking about, I want to be undisputed. And they're literally peeling a belt off of him that he's going to be stripped. He's got a Zufa belt that means absolutely nothing. He's got a ring belt that he could potentially be stripped because he hasn't fought a top five opponent in the last 2 years. And he's talking about, I want to be undisputed. Like, at what point as a fighter do you need to start being like, okay, what are we doing here? Like, team.
Why was there no question about that in the post-fight interview. How do you feel about the belts? How do you feel about...
I hope it's happening right now.
Yeah, but like in the ring immediately like the after leader? Is when you're supposed to do it. Like Max's job is to do that.
But Max had a clear agenda going into that ring.
But that is exactly my point, Dan. Why are... It's too obvious. You gotta mask the agenda a little bit. HBO didn't do that. You don't do that.
That post-fight interview was something. No, I'm going to watch that again. Because that was like two... They were talking to walls.
One guy had a script to read, and it didn't matter what the other guy said. He's got to go through the script. He's got to hit every point in the script. And nothing came out of that conversation at all. That's not the way it's supposed to be. And that is why there is a problem when it's all in one place. Yeah. HBO was a network. There was the promotion who promoted the fight. They brought it to the network. The network aired it. The network would question the fighters afterwards, and you would get some uncomfortable questions and answers because of that reason.
Larry Merchant, where are you?
Oh my God, he would make guys so uncomfortable in fights. I would have been terrified to get interviewed by Larry Merchant after a fight after I just got punched in my skull, and this guy's going to ask me some hard hitting questions.
It's a little gremlin.
But that's the problem with this all-in-house situation. It becomes way too obvious that there is an agenda and there is a narrative and it has to be upheld. It's slimy. It doesn't feel good. It's not the way it's supposed to be. We're not getting the truth. So I really, that was very disheartening for me. I really didn't like that interview. Yeah.
No, I really hated it because you're right. It is disheartening because it's like, Opetai, I can't help but feel for him, even though I just said how he should take his more control of his career and like you can't be that dumb. Like, you're not dumb, but you can't be that naive, I should say. Because it's very clear you guys just want to go in there, fight, let the managers do their things, let the promoters do their things, so you can go and focus on just the fights. And he's sitting in there just, you know, going through a very tough fight, training camp.
Listen, 12 rounds is tough. And with a guy like Lennon, that's a tough night. I don't care how many rounds you won. That's a tough night.
He's talking about, I want to be on the street. I want to fight the best. I want to be the best. And then you have Max coming in there with a legitimately like
you
a
are
corporation.
The best.
You're a corporation. Like he had it. Like it's almost like he went in like he got a note from corporate, which is like pretty much what it was. TKO. This is it. Like we don't. No. Like that. That's the whole point. Is like that's what they started saying at the beginning of the show too. It's like, no, there's a lot of other champions out there, but this is the difference between us and the rest of them. Is like, we don't need a belt for you to know that Opetai is the best in the division. Give me a break. There's other guys. There's other guys in here. Like, but he did. I will say this for Max, he did bring up Benavidez and Zerto because I mean, those are the top three right now.
You have to in cruiserweight. You're not going to be a star otherwise if you're not beating the best guys in the division. Every cruiserweight who has become a star, every cruiserweight who has gone on to the heavyweight division and actually become known, because no one knows cruiserweights, right? Every one of them who has gone up to heavyweight and become known had to have fought really good fighters. Usyk beat a bunch of really good fighters. Gassiev, you know, there was Dordakos was in there that time. There were really good guys that were in there that were in that group that they all fought each other. And Usyk was the guy who beat everybody. He beat Bredis as well. He actually had a really tough fight with Bredis. No, Vander, Dwight Muhammad Kwawi, those fights are amazing. Goes up to heavyweight. For Opetai to be the star that he is destined to be, he's got to fight Mikaelian, who's a titleist. That's the only reason he's being named, because he is a titleist. Otherwise, we wouldn't really care about him. And then you got to fight the winner or maybe whoever stays at cruiserweight after Zerto and Benavidez. I'm gonna go on record. I think Benavidez beat Zerto.
I agree, but I also think that Benavidez will stay there if they can make the Opetai fight, because you cannot depend on Bivol or Beterbiev right now.
True, that's a good point.
Because they're out doing their own thing, like they want to fight again in Russia with a whole different billionaire behind it. But I totally agree with what you're saying here. It's like
you gotta fight like cruiserweight.
Yeah, you know what he should do is fight Mikkelin for WBC. And obviously he's the IBF champion, Opetai, even if they strip him. Go fight the WBC guy next and win that title or just win that fight. And then you're not technically undisputed, but like in the minds of everyone else, like you are.
I think the only mind that matters is Jai.
You know, like it's right. The fans will all understand. Like he just like he still is the IBF.
You got to beat those other champions though. Otherwise,
But I think he's got to fight them. He's got to fight.
I agree. Like Max saying, no, you're undisputed in our eyes. No, you're not. You got to beat those guys.
That's a crazy line when crazy there's two line. Legit stars that are fighting in 2 months.
If you're not a star, you got to beat McKellion. You got to beat that guy. He beat Badu Jack. He's a lineal champion. You got to beat that guy. There's a guy with a belt in your weight class, and he beat the champion. It wasn't a vacant belt. He beat a champion. You have to beat that guy.
Based on Opetai's performance, do you think he can take on a Zerto and a Benavidez?
So on performance alone, I think he would have a lot of trouble in both fights. But in terms of who he is, I think he would be favored in both. Even the Benavidez, I think Benavidez is better than Zerto. I think they're going to have a hell of a fight, and they're going to tear each other limb from limb, and it's going to be a great fight because Zerto is a dog. But I want to see Opetai fight both of those guys, regardless of who wins. I can see how Zerto would give Opetai a lot of trouble. I've said that the last time I watched Zerto when he fought Billiam Smith, I go, man, I really want to see this Opetai fight because I see how the pressure and body punching and aggression, because we saw aggression tonight, made Opetai back up all night long. You know, there was no time where Opetai was like, I'm the boss, I'm going to come forward, I'm going to back you up. He didn't do that tonight. He couldn't. Glanton was too strong. So you got a guy like Zerto. You're not backing Zerto up either. He's going to be in Benavidez? Your face, and he throws a ton of punches. Same thing. Benavidez is Zerto, but better. He's similar. He's big. He throws way more punches. I think he's way smarter with his punches. I think he hits harder to the head, not to the body. Zerto's a very good body puncher. He's got a much better jab. Yeah, Zerto, I think, is just, I mean, excuse me. Benavidez is like Zerto 10 out of 10. You know, like he's a better version of him, except he's not a southpaw. So I think both guys would have a lot of success with Opetai. I think Opetai has to dig deep to win both those fights, if he is to win both those fights, because he might not.
Oh, I mean,
this is why you're not undisputed, dude. You got to beat those guys, because I can see Zerto beating Opetai. I'm not saying he would, but you got to beat those. You got to beat that guy. If I don't see Zerto Opetai, there is no undisputed champion at cruiserweight. Simple as that. You can't just declare you're undisputed. You have to beat the other guys in the weight class. There's McKellion is a champion, but there's Zerto and Benavidez. And really, it's Zerto because Benavidez is coming up in weight. He's coming into the weight class. He kind of stole that fight from Opetai. That's the fight that needs to happen, is Opetai and Zerto. Because, listen, you asked me who I think...
Even if Benavidez beats him?
If Benavidez decides to stay at cruiserweight, then you have to fight Benavidez. But if Benavidez jumps in...
I think they're
going to
throw a ton of money at them.
Absolutely. In which case, you got to fight that guy. You know, and so now there's a new player in town. If this guy becomes a cruiserweight and stays a cruiserweight, you got a new player. Regardless.
I think if Benavidez wins, they're going to... Yeah.
You can't be the guy. You cannot be undisputed if you don't fight everybody. That is what undisputed means. You're fighting the other champions. If you have other guys in your orbit who can say that they're champions in your weight class, you're not undisputed. I don't care what Max Kellerman says. You have to fight that guy.
I can't believe that. That interview is pissing me off more and more.
Yeah.
And I see more people tweeting about it right now. Like Max has his own definition of undisputed.
Okay, go ask Zerto. Okay, don't disrespect someone like Zerto, who is a very good fighter and is a three-division world champion and has a title in this weight class and has a stake to the claim of being the best cruiserweight in the world. Because it's not like it's not a foregone conclusion. Guys have to fight. That's why we fight. So, yes, do I think Jai Opetai is the best cruiserweight in the world? Yep, 100%, I do. But I got to see you fight Zerto Ramirez if you're going to say you're undisputed. Because I don't even think Jai would say he's undisputed. I don't think he would say he's the man. He's talking about belts. He wants to fight the best in the world. He's talking about other fighters. He is a real champion. He's a warrior. He wants to fight the best. He wants to prove himself, which the only place you can prove yourself in boxing is in the ring. So until he fights those guys, no, there is no cruiserweight king.
It's pretty cool that there's such good options too. It's like, obviously, cruiserweight's a division that has never really had like formidable stars. There's a reason why everyone like these guys leave it. It's a springboard to heavyweight. It's a light heavyweight has had a lot more prestige. Cruiserweight hasn't. But right now, Benavidez, Zerto, Opataya, that's a damn good like, you know, round robin right there. Because I do think if Benavidez should beat Zerto, right? Would you? Not 100%,
he should, but like I think he would, but that's not.
But at that point, I know that's not how it works. But like he's the favorite, and I think we all could say that. Okay, if Benavidez gets past Zerto, Benavidez can obviously go back down to light heavy. But I think that the ring, Zuffa, that whole machine is going to throw a bunch of money at Benavidez because they can make Benavidez Opataya, and that could be one of their big events. And then we're even closer to an undisputed champion, or what we can even get close to these days for undisputed.
Benavidez is still PBC, no?
Yeah, he's all fighting right. On cool. PBC.
Good luck making that fight, then.
I know, because that's a whole nother mess right there.
That's a whole nother can of worms.
It's so weird. You have your prized possession, your prized signing, Opataya. His message is so clear. Undisputed. And then you have the promoter. No. This is unheard. This is boxing in a nutshell. It's absolutely ridiculous to watch this play. It's absolutely. That's why I honestly almost. I was checked out this weekend of this IBF story because I just had enough. Like, I just did not care enough to get in the middle of it. Who's right? Who's wrong? It's just, I just want to watch fights. I got into this sport and media game to watch fights and react to them.
Less and less we're talking about fights. We're talking about the high school drama that is surrounding the fights now. It's
bro, and you're doing these lives 5 days a week. It's like, how often are you actually talking about fights?
Very little. 20%. 20%.
20%? What other sport is that?
The not drama around better. Fighting, man. It's not. It's yeah. I mean, it gives us plenty of content to talk about, but the sport is healthier when we're talking about fights. I think we're
going to get big fights.
We're going to change the name of this podcast, Dan.
We're going to go inside litigation.
No. We're going to go old school. We're just going to go old school fights. We're going to go.
Let's talk about all. Okay, you know what we should do? Pretend it's like 1999 and treat every week. The week in 1999 or 19, like in the 90s.
We're going to get ready for De La Hoya, Trinidad, Fight of the Millennia. Shane Mosley is ripping through the lightweight division. Arturo Gatti is a star. Yeah, that's that. Imagine those days. Could you imagine if we were doing a show in the late 90s when Floyd was coming out of the amateurs, in the Olympics? De La Hoya was at the height of his powers. Arturo Gatti was knocking guys' heads off on Boxing After Dark. What a time. ESPN Friday Night Fights. Mickey Ward was knocking guys out to the liver. Emmanuel Augustus was coming onto the scene. Come on.
It's at its worst right now in terms of the pettiness and the business drama. Side. I don't see it getting any better anytime soon, too. Like, there will be good fights coming up. Like, we do have a bunch of fights starting in, like, you know, mid-March and then right into April. So I always hold out hope that... But the last couple of weeks have been brutal. Like lawsuits. We're talking about lawsuits. We're talking about the virtual Golden Boy situation. We're talking about Zuffa.
You were talking about going back to school for law. You're gonna go to go to law school.
I already am a lawyer. I went for 8 years. I can do another 8.
Yeah, but you got a liberal arts degree in 8 years. It's a little different, Dan.
A little different. It's not going to end anytime soon either because we're talking more lawsuits. Dana White, as we speak, is up there on the stage talking about how he's going to sue the IBF. So add it on the docket.
For what?
Add it on the docket. Another lawsuit, baby.
For what?
If you're a boxing lawyer?
You're making money right now.
Pat English's of the world, there's like 3 of them. And they all use the same ones.
If
Alex Dombrov.
If I could do it all again, I would have went to law school instead of pre-med. Like I was going to go the medical route, and I obviously decided not to. I was pre-med, and then I went, instead of taking the MCAT and going off to medical school, I decided to be a boxer. I should have gone to the law route. I probably would have made it to actually taking the LSATs and gone to law school, and probably still could have fought. But yeah, I guess there's still time, right? I can go back to school. I got time.
You can still go back. As long as we can do the podcast.
That might be my retirement.
All right, everyone. That is our episode. It is late here on the East Coast. We'll have it out for you. We'll be back on Thursday with more news. Inoue versus Nakatani. Like, come on. We got Inoue Nakatani.
Talking about fights. Talking about a fight.
We got Inoue Nakatani. Got to dedicate a whole episode
no
to
No drama around Inoue. Never drama around Inoue. That guy is all business.
I can't wait for that. MVP announces a deal with ESPN, which bringing awesome. Boxing back to ESPN. And we'll get into all that on Thursday's episode. We're going to keep our eyes also on all the nonsense that's going on with the belts. The six-belt era. We're in the six-belt era, baby.
That sounds bad. That sounds rough.
It's horrible. All right, keep your hands up at all times. Protect yourselves at all times. Stay at those DMs. We're out.